I love that last song that you just sang, Paul. Keith Green, right?
Yep.
Oh my gosh. But that idea of the beauty of God in those eyes, like being on us, when your eyes are on this child, is just really what the sermon is about this morning. What that means, how we understand ourselves in light of those eyes looking at us, who God is, who we are. That's the whole point, really, right there in a nutshell. So let's pray. No. So we're in 1 John and have been going through this letter, this beautiful letter from John. Many think of it as an introduction to his gospel to make sure that we don't miss the point, and kind of like a preface before we read through John's gospel. And in it, he's capturing this idea of the heart of God being a God of love and being a God of light. And so at the end of this chapter and bleeding over into 3, we're going to start at 2:28 today. He says, "And now, little children, abide in him, so that when he appears, we may have confidence and not shrink from him in shame at his coming. If you know that he is righteous, you may be sure that everyone who practices righteousness has been born of him. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure." The word of the Lord. So backing up just briefly into last week's talk. Last week we were talking about this idea of a truth, that God is this light, and this light reveals to us reality. Reality greater than sometimes we're comfortable with, right? That oftentimes we end up with a version of reality that we almost might prefer to the real thing, the way that we think of ourselves. I told a story last week about a wave that I surfed, and then later found out that there was film of that wave, and only to realize to my chagrin that the wave was much smaller than I had pictured in my head, right? That I like this idea of my reality almost more, but the only way that we grow and change is by seeing the truth. And John has divided this letter into really two main themes. The first being that God is light. In him there is no darkness. Therefore, we need to walk in the light. And secondly, that God is love. And how we respond to that is to love each other. And I love this idea of this sort of truth. When we understand and know God, it drives us into a change of behavior. It shapes the way that we live. It doesn't just become something that we know, but it becomes something that we then act into. And what we see here in these verses that we just read is it changes us. It shapes us. We become more and more and more like God. As we behave like God, we become more and more like God. In this promise that someday this work will be completed, that there is a finished version of you that God is in the process of forming. I found out this week that our beloved friend John Pettit has gone home in hospice, and so our hearts are with him. I thought John is one of my staunchly reformed friends, so I thought this morning I would quote a little John Calvin for you in honor of John Pettit. He says, the very first line of the Institutes, he says, "Nearly all the wisdom which we possess, that is to say true and sound wisdom, consists of two parts, the knowledge of God and of ourselves. But while joined by many bonds, which one proceeds and brings forth the other is not easy to discern." I love this from Calvin. If you grasp that, he's going, to understand God is to understand ourselves. And hopefully, if we're walking in the light, to understand ourself, our true self, not the self we create, but the one there, our heart, to understand our heart is to understand God. And all of us are in a process of learning more and more and more as we go through life about God, and more and more and more about ourselves as we walk in that truth. This is what the truth reveals, who God is, and as it turns out, who we are. And we see this beautiful statement from John now as he's been talking about us and our relationship with God. Who are we? He says it here, you are God's children. And this profound truth, if we could grasp it, would radically change the way we live. If we understood that kind of love. And Paul talks about this is love that is a knowledge that surpasses knowledge. It's more sometimes than I think that we can bear. But the truth is, we live in a world that isn't really interested in this sort of knowledge, is instead much more focused on the outward appearance. I like that verse from Samuel says in regards to David, when David is chosen and it's sort of the runt of the litter, right? And Samuel says, well, man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart. And the truth is, that's the only thing really God cares about you, is your heart. Not all the outward stuff. And we probably spend the bulk of our lives on the outward self, what Thomas Merton calls the false self versus the true self. And he even describes us wrapping this false self with these bandages so it'll take on form, right? It's like the invisible man. And he finishes that analogy by saying that what's the problem with that false self? Well, God doesn't love that false self. Why? Because it doesn't exist, right? This image that we spend so much of our time trying to create, us having it all together, us looking successful, our value and worth being seen by these outward things. God looks at it and says, I don't know that person. That's not a real person. But what I do care about is you. There's a book by David Benner called Surrender to Love. And in it, he's not the first one to ask this question, but he says it so bluntly at the start of the book. What comes to God's mind when he thinks of you? What comes to his mind? If you're taking notes, jot down what comes to God's mind when he thinks of you. First thing that comes into your mind. And I think so often there, how we answer that question reveals so much of our understanding of God and our understanding of ourselves. It comes to God's mind when he thinks of you. Like, not so bad, right? It comes to mind when God thinks of Jeff. Like, probably capable of a little more than what he's performed, right? What comes to mind, this self-critical thing generally falls back into this sort of old patterns and lies and false images. Which is why I think it's so powerful when he says, you are the children of God. What comes to mind when I think of her right over there? That little girl. Brilliant. This girl is brilliant. What comes to mind when I think of my son, like, oh, so deep and authentic. What comes to mind when I think of Lila, who just turned 13 yesterday. I have no little kids in my family anymore. What comes to mind when I think of Lila is just delight. When she gets good news, she just sits there and beams and sits in her joy, like, ah. And I look at her and I just go, ah, that is just you being you. When I say you're brilliant, I don't just mean you're smart. Such deep integrity. But Mia strives for excellence in the best way. That's a girl that gets 100% on her calculus BC tests. Can you imagine that? Getting 100%? That's insane. Sorry. I just think she's brilliant. Love that girl. But what I love more than anything is when she comes in and sits next to me in church. And I go, oh, my daughter. Right? This is what he's talking about. Behold the love. He's saying this is the kind of love that God has for us. Can you even imagine that? And Paul's going, you can't, right? But try. Try to get your head around that. Knowledge that surpasses knowledge. And so I think sometimes we need to answer that question again. There was this great commercial that came out a few years ago where they told these older women, like, run like a girl, hit like a girl. Did you see this one? And then they asked all these young girls, hit like a girl, and they're like, oh, like totally fierce. And then they showed these older women that video and said, do you want to do it again? And they were like, yes, please. And I think for all of us, sometimes we have an image of ourselves that's been shaped by a lot of different things, culture and expectations and pressure. And so we walk around with a distorted sense of who we are. And John's saying, you're God's child. Like, stand up straight. God's so delighted in you and proud of you. We live in a world that's kind of trying to create these small stories for our life. I told you about this show that I watched called In and of Itself by Derek Delgadio. And he, in that, tells the story of the blind men and the elephant, right? Are you familiar with this? I think this is like every culture's got some version of this story where there's this elephant standing there and these blind men come upon it and they all start feeling different aspects of the elephant and going, oh, it's like a snake, or it's got these enormous wings, or it's, you know, these, and you're like, and then they decide like, oh, no, it's got these tree trunks, you know, for legs. And then they decide all together like, oh, no, this is just an elephant. And what Derek says in this that I think is brilliant is he goes, what if they're wrong? What if it's not just an elephant? What if it really is this sort of magical creature and that these five blind men decide, no, it's just an elephant? And then what if that elephant believes them and goes, oh, I'm just an elephant? What he does in that, and I'm sorry if I go on and on about this, I just loved this one scene in particular where, I'm just going to spoil it, so now you don't have to get a Hulu membership. He does this sleight of hand, but out of this pile of letters, they pick a letter, and on the back of it, it's got a label, friend, father, son, and they open it up, and you're like, what the heck is this, right? But he's going, you're going to see this person for the first time, who they really are. And they get this letter, chokes me up just thinking about it. They get this letter and it's from that father or that son, handwritten to them. I have no idea how he does it, but it, like, you watch their face change, right, as they're reading this, as that love for who they are is seen. You're watching and you see that face transform. This is what God's love does. It comes in and it says, I know you and I love you. And man, we've got so much armor around that reality. So much defensiveness. So many ways we answer that question with this posture of self-protection. This last week, one of the things that I get to do is periodically throughout the year, I teach a spiritual formation program. And in it, we start by just every student sharing their story. And every one of these students is had a long journey. Most people are in their 40s or 50s and beyond that, age-wise. Many of these people have walked with Christ their whole lives, or much of their life. But as they share their story, and as their heart comes out, wow, it's profound. These stories, every single one that's filled with pain and hurt and suffering and growth and redemption and struggle, all of this stuff that's going on and how God has walked with each one through all of that. I think sometimes we want this version of reality that's a lot more like G-rated and everything works out and it's a little easier. And what we find is something much more complex. And yet what you hear in each one in this vulnerable, the real story, right? When that comes into this space, I always think I'll like want to take my shoes off because it feels like holy ground. When you see people's heart revealed, how God has loved them and cared for them and walked with them. Because the thing is, we could just get a revolving line of each one of you to come up here and share. Every one of your stories unique and profound and brilliant. And there's somebody that could write each one of you a letter. But the truth is that God knows us even better than we know ourselves. That we are God's children, and to understand that reality goes so deep, but we have to lower our guard to hear it. We have to walk in the light in order to receive that love. That when we're living in this sort of false reality and all these insecurities and others' expectations and all this, it has this way of sort of blocking the light and blocking the truth. And this is the painful, hard part of all this, is that the only way to do that is to be in that vulnerable place with God. And let's be honest, most of us don't really like vulnerability, do we? I remember when I wrote my book and there was chapters in there that were more vulnerable than I wanted to be. And somebody said, like, oh, are you so excited? And I was like, no, I'm sitting here thinking, what have I done? C.S. Lewis says in The Four Loves, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything in your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe and dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable. Impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. And John tells us that this life that's lived in like opposition, like running from the light, what is it going to do when that light finally reveals it? It's going to be unbearable. The word John uses is shame. Like when that light finally comes in its fullness, that soul will experience deep shame. And Brené, I think, does a great job of kind of distinguishing between guilt and shame. And guilt is where you do something wrong, which we all do, and the light exposes that we do something wrong. But when we live apart from this vulnerability, the shame is, I am something wrong. And it turns out that's the thing that God wants to come in there and soften. That identity that's so broken and, again, like disconnected. I like how Lewis says it gets harder and harder, right? You see how God comes in and says, I'm going to give you a heart of flesh, not a heart of stone. That our false self and all the ways of managing that heart and our self-protection, what we're running from is we're running from vulnerability. We don't like the way vulnerability feels, so we dodge it as if we've managed it, right? That's the detachment. But see, the vulnerability isn't the problem. The problem behind that is the deep insecurity or the fear or the anxiety or whatever that thing is. So by avoiding the light, all we do is sort of isolate the pain. Does that make sense? That by coming into vulnerability, coming into the light, is where those fears are exposed, where they can be healed. But when we run from vulnerability, we think we've fixed it and we've fixed nothing, right? We sit there in our loneliness still, feeling safe, when in fact our heart condition is not being treated. Proverbs 25 says, the purpose in a man's heart is like deep water, but a man of understanding will draw it out. And that love that draws us out requires vulnerability. It requires walking in the light, seeing ourselves for who we are, seeing our brokenness, seeing our woundedness. But what we have is a God who draws near to the brokenhearted. Somebody that I follow on Instagram one time took this picture, and it was taken at Disneyland. And they were at California Adventure, and I guess there's like Pixar Land over there. And they had the characters from the movie Inside Out. Have any of you seen that movie? And so all the little, the characters of this all represent emotions within this child's mind, right? And so all these characters were there. I don't remember. There's like anger, and then there's sadness, and there's joy. And he was saying as he came near, you could go up and get your photo taken, you know, like you can with Mickey or Alice in Wonderland or whatever. He said the line, the way longer than all the rest, was for which emotion? Sadness. And he got in that line himself and went all the way up and waited and waited. And he said, this chokes me up too, but he said, as he got near, he saw these kids with disabilities standing in that line, going up and hugging her. And he was saying, what a profound moment, right? But you go, so often that thing that we're protecting ourselves from, right? Hiding, keeping at arm's length, is this incredibly tender part of who we are. And like that, to me, to understand God's love. 2 Corinthians, one of these moments for me, I think when I was a kid, I was probably 13, I had this moment of real loneliness and ended up like flipping through my Bible and coming to this verse and reading it and feeling this verse. But in 2 Corinthians 1, he says, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. For just as we share abundantly in the sufferings of Christ, so also our comfort abounds through Christ. I remember reading that. I remember feeling that comfort. And I use the NIV here because I love this translation, the Father of compassion. And compassion, in its most literal definition, means to sit with others in their pain. This is what God does. Right? That in that pain, instead of just ignoring it or pretending that it's not there, God comes to the brokenhearted and sits with them. That is what a compassionate God does. Sits with us in our pain. This kind of love, this is the tenderness of God that takes that pain and uses it, transforms it, creates something new in our lives through it. And we receive that comfort and then we give that comfort. This is what's so brilliant about how God works, is not only do we receive it, not only does that shape it, but it becomes our mission, our responsibility, in fact. When we receive comfort, it changes the way we see. As God comes in and sits with me in my loneliness, all of a sudden all I saw around me was other people's loneliness. Changes the way we see. And we sit with them in our struggle, in our pain, with a sort of authority. And this love of God, as Paul said, and I keep mentioning this, this is beyond our comprehension, right? He wants us to ponder, to fathom how high and deep and wide this love is. Because to understand that is to understand ourselves, to know who we are. I think about the prodigal son story, which is to me one of the greatest examples of a love that we cannot comprehend. A son who has basically disgraced his father, said, I hate you, I want nothing to do with you, taken all his inheritance, spoiled it all, he's broke, He comes home just hoping maybe he could serve as a servant in his father's home, and he's greeted by this father who runs disgracefully, right? Publicly humiliates himself, running out to get to his son, who before his son can apologize is embraced, kissed. And as we've talked about plenty of times, the story continues on with a brother who's done everything right, the loyal, good son, standing outside this celebratory party for his younger brother, and in resentment refusing to come inside, which ends up being the warning, right? We're used to talking about the sin of like spoiling our inheritance, and we forget that the graver warning of this is the one who lives disconnected, who stayed home the whole time and yet has experienced none of the intimacy that was available to him. The father says, "My son, you are always with me. Everything I have is yours." But see, when we don't understand the father's love, we live disconnected from that. We end up trying to impress God, right, by doing all our good acts and good deeds, and it just doesn't, right? That's the wrapping of that false self with bandages, and God saying, "I don't know that person, Jeff. I don't know that person." God doesn't want us to play church. God doesn't want us to act like we've spiritually got it all together. And I think too often church can just be that. Community can be just another sort of religious pressure. Don't you guys all have this figured out by now? And we're like, "Oh my goodness, if you knew what a mess I am." But God goes, "I know. I know you. I love you." And as our heart breaks in that vulnerable place, God comes in and holds that heart with such value. Says, "You're my child, and I'm turning you into something new." In one of his essays, it's called Man or Rabbit, C.S. Lewis talks about this idea of striving to be good. And essentially what happens is we climb this mountain and get to the very top only to realize that we have further to go. And there, in like the cold, without being able to breathe oxygen in, we're like in this place of desperation, right? We cannot climb high enough. Because as Lewis says, the rest is a matter for flying. That we have to be changed. And this is what John is saying, that as you know who you are, this child of God, you're growing into a new creation. Something that we haven't yet seen. Jesus being the first fruits, he says, "We are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure." But this heart is healed as we sit with God in that light. As we learn who we are and who he is, our lives change and become like his. And have you experienced that kind of love of God? I think oftentimes I don't. And I think we don't always in this life. I think we still see through a glass darkly or dimly. It's interesting, I think, all of the times where I have felt that has taken a step of my own. I think about that time I described where I looked up comfort in the concordance of my Bible, because this is well before you could do a Google search, and just found the verse with the most comforts in it, and then read that, and in that moment experienced God's love. I think of another time where I was out in my favorite place, this little abbey, and I still can go back and find the journal where I wrote, "This is as far as I can go. God, the rest is up to you." That basically all my energy was like to get there. and then feeling God's love in the midst of that room. Think of a time where I one time was in a completely different church and had never been in an Episcopal church, but was actually there as a guest and went forward to receive communion, and all of a sudden felt God's love in that simple act. I can think of another time where I was in a Pentecostal gathering, and you could imagine introverted Jeff. I was like against the wall, like, whew, and had somebody come up and pray over me there. And I mean, I talk about it in my book, like everybody turned in towards me and like praying in tongues, like full volume. And I was like, like God's love there. And I knew it. It's funny because when I walked out the door, I like really heard God say to me, "You okay?" It's like, yeah, give me a minute, you know, I'll be okay. I sat in a quiet little Catholic sanctuary where these priests were praying and nobody was there but me, and I walked in. And all of a sudden felt God's love for me there. And when this happens, I love how John says this. Like the ESV translation that's in your pew Bibles blows it on this one. It says, "See the love." And the NIV and others say, "Behold. Behold the love." And it is something that takes us beyond this world, takes us into realities that are bigger than we can fathom. This is the kind of love that spills over into eternity. Love that's bigger than this world can contain. And it's worth it as we walk in that light, as that light does its work, as we live in the vulnerability of that and are seen for who we are. We learn to receive that love for who we are and then to give it to others without blaming others, without judging others, to pour that comfort of God onto others. I've said this and I'll say it again, that the vision for our church is that this would be a safe space to heal and a brave space to grow. Can we be a community that can hold each other's stories and brokenness with a sense of trustworthiness? That this can be a place that all of us can experience that love and grow more and more fully into who God has made us to be. To look into each other's eyes and see that child of God. Here's my questions for us today. And I'm going to ask you this first one right now. What comes to God's mind when he thinks of you? And my follow-up there is, have you asked him? I would encourage you to ask him. Maybe just right now, sitting there in that pew. God, what comes to your mind when you think of me? Question two, what are some ways you avoid being seen? How do you protect yourself from vulnerability? We all do it. And number three, what is the deeper emotion you're guarding? What would it be like to let the God of compassion into the deeper waters of your heart? We're going to close with one more song. But as we go into that, let me just go back to Paul's words in Ephesians 3 as he prays for them and for us. May we this week have the strength to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and length and height and depth, and to know the love of Christ that surpasses knowledge, that you may be filled with all the fullness of God. Amen.